Hello and welcome to SwissInfo.ch's programme for January the 18th. I'm Thomas Stevens. You're a bomber pilot over Germany during the Second World War and your plane gets hit by flak. You can't stay airborne for much longer. What do you do? If there are flames everywhere, you'd probably bail out and cross your fingers. If you've got a bit more time, you might consider crash landing in the lush and neutral pastures of Switzerland. At least 250 planes did exactly that between 1939 and 1945. In a minute, we'll hear how they did it and what happened next. But first, trains. One cultural difference between Switzerland and most other countries is the large number of carriages reserved for first-class passengers. At peak times, notably rush hours and weekends, it's not unusual to see people standing in full second-class carriages looking wistfully at rows of empty seats in first-class carriages. This could all change, however, if Green Party politician Alina Traeder gets her way. Traeder intends to put forward a motion at the next parliamentary session calling for abolition of first-class carriages, at least on Saturdays and Sundays.
I want that if you have a second-class abonnement, you can also use the first class in the weekend. In the weekend when I am in the train, I can see that there are so many people in the second class, really, that you have not a place to sit. And in the first class, there is no one. And it's in winter when you go skiing or I don't know what you are doing, then you can see this situation always. And I think it's really stupid to have the place, so you have the first class who is already there, and it's also going from A to B, but there is no one who can sit there.
A so-called general abonnement, or GA, lets its owner hop on and off Switzerland's entire public transport network without having to buy a ticket. Very handy if you do a lot of travelling, for example, long-distance commuting, but they're not cheap. A one-year second-class GA will set you back 3,550 francs, and a first-class one, 5,800 francs. Owners of first-class GAs, who enjoy perks like bigger, plusher seats and more legroom, are therefore not exactly thrilled by the thought of being surrounded by families with loads of luggage and or children. Kurt Schreiber, president of Pro Bahn Switzerland, a public transport lobby group, dismisses the proposal.
It's more or less a crazy idea for me, because we have this differentiation between first and second class since the railway does exist. We know it in every country in Europe and also in overseas, and I do not see why we have to abolish the system, which is a good system.
For Schreiber, who travels second class, people who pay a premium should get correspondingly better service.
We have a price difference of 70% between first and second class. So if you are a consumer paying 70% more than in the second class, you have also certain expectations. You expect that when you are in your coach and when you are doing a trip, you will do this trip seated.
But shouldn't passengers with second-class tickets, which are hardly cheap, also expect a seat?
Yes, of course, of course. It's absolutely an objective to guarantee to have the possibility in travelling seated, also in the second class. And this is also one of the aims of Pro Bahn Switzerland. We urge that there are enough seated places put at the disposal of the people.
Alina Traeder appreciates expectations of first-class commuters and is therefore calling for an open seat policy only at weekends.
I think if you are really a person who has to work, who has to travel, so and you pay really double or 6,000 francs for the whole year for the first class, then I think you are allowed to have a bit more comfort. But I think that's during the week, but in the weekend there is no one who has to be in a first class.
Critics point to potential environmental consequences, with disgruntled first-classers jumping into cars and making traffic jams even worse. But Traeder looks at it from the other angle.
In the weekend, maybe there are also people who say, OK, if there is space enough, so I don't need my car, if I can really use one time the first class, it's also special for me, so I take the train and not the car again.
Raymond Wüst, who specialises in operations management and traffic at the Zurich University of Applied Science, reckons many people have already had this idea of removing first-class carriages at busy times, but doesn't think it's a good one.
The main reason is possible market segmentation that you can do at the moment, that you provide a product for each demand profile of customer, would disappear. So it would be bad for the operator, and it would be bad for the client as well, because at least those passengers that currently go by train and can afford a first-class ticket would then choose a different transport mode.
Voost and Treder agree that the problem is concentrated on certain destinations, regional routes, for example, where first-class carriages are often close to empty. But Voost says there are many destinations where there is no possibility of gaining space by getting rid of first-class.
If you consider, for instance, the destination Zurich to Bern, then you will see that almost at no time during the day there is a difference in the seat occupation level between first and second class. But commuter train networks, I think this might be a considerable thing to make the first class offer more flexible.
One option, Voost said, would be the use of a so-called moving curtain, as on aeroplanes, where business class is often opened up to some economy passengers depending on numbers. Kurt Schreiber at ProBahn points out that in special circumstances, such as football matches, the railways already not only lay on extra trains, but also change the class status of carriages.
If, for instance, at weekends trains are occupied more than 100%, it arrives that railway authorities will declare a first-class coach as a second-class coach. So you can enter with a second-class ticket in a first-class coach and you do not pay a supplement. Therefore, if you want, in a certain circumstance, this problem has already been solved.
It's not only train passengers who are feeling the squeeze. On January the 16th, it was announced that last year more passengers had passed through the three biggest Swiss airports than ever before, although the number of flights had actually gone down. Planes are now on average larger and more often filled to capacity, according to the Zurich airport operator. Zurich was the country's busiest hub in terms of passengers, with nearly 25 million using it, 63,000 more than in 2012. However, the number of takeoffs and landings decreased by 3%. Demand was also up in Geneva, where passenger numbers increased by 4% to 14.4 million. From passenger jets to fighters and bombers. Between 1943 and 1945, air battles raged over Germany on an almost daily basis, involving hundreds of planes. More than 250 aircraft crashed or made emergency landings in Switzerland during the Second World War, a manoeuvre that was obviously not without risks.
The chutes didn't open, so it depends on the situation on the plane, but there are some guys who died. The first one who died actually in Lake Constance, because the whole plane went down with him inside.
Danny Egger is one of the authors of Strange Planes in Eastern Switzerland, 1939 to 1945, set to be published in German and English in May 2014. It's a photo book focusing on the 38 planes which came down in five cantons near the German border. At 51, Egger is too young to remember the war directly, but he recently spoke to someone who was a child at the time.
And I asked him, how was it? Was it dangerous for you, or what was your feeling? And he said that was unique. You never saw a plane this big before. So all the boys and the girls from a town ran to the bomber when it went down. And at most of the scenes, children are the first ones being there to welcome the crews.
Most of the crews who came down in Switzerland survived, although some landings were smoother than others. On February the 22nd, 1945, 20-year-old Robert Rocky Rhodes took off in his North American P-51 Mustang from Italy to strafe the rail network between Lindau and Ulm in southern Germany. Hit by flak, he headed home, but his plane gave up the ghost over the Rhine and pancaked on a gravel river bank. Coming to a standstill in shallow water, Rhodes thought he was still in Germany, but locals who had hurried to the scene explained that he was in fact in Liechtenstein and safe. There was also the German pilot who wanted to defect to Switzerland in October 1944, but had to make two attempts to land in his chosen field in St. Gallen. The first time, he was foiled by a herd of cattle. Egger's book focuses on the planes and the crash landings, but it also explains what happened to the crews afterwards.
After integration or quarantine, the officers went to Davos because in wartime the hotels are not booked. So they went to Davos, yep. And the enlisted men went to Adelbodeland, Wengen.
One American pilot who spent part of his war interned in Davos, now an exclusive ski resort, was Charles Cassidy. His bomber was severely damaged during a raid on Munich in July 1944, and he was forced to land in Switzerland. He later wrote his memories of his time as an internee in Davos, before escaping. Here is an excerpt.
Sometime later, we were moved to the palace, which was directly across the street from the German embassy. Over the front door of the embassy hung the German eagle and swastika. One night, after we had moved to the palace, the emblem disappeared. Naturally, suspicion fell on the Americans, so we were confined to quarters until the emblem reappeared. I never found out who had taken it, but my suspicions were the same as those that the Germans held. We had our freedom as long as we were present for bed check. Several times, to break the monotony, we hiked through the valley and over the pass to Klosters, about 3 kilometers from the Austrian border, to eat at a small cafe. The little restaurant had, inside the premises, a tank with fish swimming about. One could choose the fish for dinner that was desired. Tours to various places in Switzerland were to be had. We were free to go if we would sign a parole. I never went on one because I would not give a parole, since I had my mind set on escape at first opportunity. Prior to this, we had been told that anyone escaping after giving a parole would be returned to Switzerland by U.S. authorities. While living at the palace, on one occasion, the desk clerk, a man much older than we were, but much younger than we are now, called us over to the desk and said that he had something to show us that might interest us. Being young and always curious, we went to the desk. The clerk opened 2 heavily bound books containing names of those who had stayed there over the years. He pointed to the names of 2 guests who had roomed at the palace in the 19th century, A. Conan Doyle and Robert Louis Stevenson. At that time, there were tuberculosis sanitariums in Davos, so I suppose that is the reason that Stevenson was there, because it was this disease that finally caused his death while living in the South Seas.
Some Swiss wartime memories of American pilot Charles Cassidy. If you have stories, information, or photos about any of the planes which landed in Switzerland during the Second World War, perhaps you were even on board, Egger would very much like to hear from you at danny@warbird.ch. Thanks for listening. Read more about these stories and other Swiss news and views at swissinfo.ch. I'm Thomas Stevens.